Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. A MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tincata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tincata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tincata fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tincata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tincata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TincataFabrics.com.
All right, welcome to FDIC 2022. We're here doing a podcast. I'm Jeff Ditchworth, Strategic Fire Training. So we're going to sit around and have a little discussion about our experience here this year and what we've seen in the last couple of days of hands-on training. Just a quick introduction. We have Chad Gruber, John Mateer, of course, Jeff Shoup, Martin Rainey, Blake Diebler, and Micah Heidemann. So guys, great couple of days. We had a couple of full classes, good 8 hours of training with each one of them. And we got to push them to their limits and get them to pick up a few tips and nuggets from us. Jeff, what's your summarization of the last couple of days?
My summarization is really that we had, as you said, two great days. I believe that we hit it out of the park both days. Students, they went away satisfied. One of the things, like you guys know, that with what we do when we end the day, we get everybody together. We recap what we've done throughout that day, what they have done, what they've accomplished, because so many of these people come into our class, and being an engine company fire attack class, we really do help them. You don't realize the impact we're making. So just go back to some of the people that we saw Monday and Tuesday. One person has 2 months on a job. One person has 9 months on a job. One person has 32 years on a job. Another one has 27 years. So you have new firefighters, older officers, and everything in between. So why I say we hit it out of the park is that you take a look at how we have started them with the show and flow that we do all the time that we've, I will say, perfected, working with different size attack hose lines and then taking them right up to master streams and so forth. And when they get done with that, we go into our group work or our specialty area work, and everybody rotates through that. And have you realized that everyone comes out when we get them together at the end of the day? Did you have everybody get through having a good time? Everybody's pretty much happy with it. Did you learn something? Everybody comes away with something that they can take with them. And it's a good feeling and so forth to run across that, because you're taking people, like in our case, our class, we had people from, well, we had this one person from Japan, okay? I know in the past, I've had someone from Tokyo, someone from Poland and so forth. And it's great when you have people coming across the world to take your class. So okay. But anyways, yeah, is that a good summarization?
That's where I was hoping you would go.
Right.
And knowing that the FDIC brings in people from an international community,
yeah,
and then we have a chance to touch the fire service around the world. This is pretty incredible experience for us as instructors. Can you talk a little bit about the history of FDIC, the first year you were teaching here at FDIC?
Oh, don't point that finger.
Maybe you don't want to give the year, but can you go into like what were some of those first hands-on training classes and what were they like versus now?
Well, let's go back to when FDIC was held in Cincinnati and before that. See, this originated, if I'm correct, this originated from the old Fire Department Instructors Conference held by the Memphis Fire Department back in the 70s and before. And as things changed in its organization and they ended up in Cincinnati, and that was in the 80s, you had all the classes going on and they were trying to bring hands-on into it. Well, of course, they didn't have the facilities available at that time. It was a new idea. So they're flowing water in the streets of downtown Cincinnati and setting up props and things like that. And next thing you knew, you had a change in location. And you had all this, as Bob Halton said the other night in the instructors meeting for us, that you have all these fire departments within such a tremendous radius that are willing to back this venue. We had a fire truck in our training. That Terre Haute ladder truck came halfway across the state of Indiana to work with us. And we had it last year in our engine class last year. And by the way, for those of you out there who are thinking, what's this guy dealing with a ladder truck for? It's because a ladder truck is part of the fire ground. And we might have to take hose up the ladder sometime. So that's why we'd like to have that. But it was interesting, too, because the guys from Terre Haute who came with us, came with the ladder truck last year, they loved because they took part in the class and they came back this year.
Yeah, they asked to come back.
Well, they have to come back, but that, nevertheless, you know, then a couple of their other people came back to or came to the class also. So everybody really, like I say, they see the value, and we make the point about ladder trucks, you know, and how they get the fire building while the engines work around them and so forth. So anyways.
Truckies are people too.
Truckies are people too.
Yep.
So, and we have fun with them.
Yeah.
That's kind of part of it.
So, yeah. But it's the way it goes. Yeah. We've done very well. And the commitment here, you know, from this whole area. And that's another thing, by the way, Gary Coney, he's a captain from Chicago. I met him, worked with him years and years ago here. And I saw him one night and I said, so where's your class at? He says, Champaign. And I looked at him and said, Illinois? So the students were getting up extra early. But that's the thing, like I said, you find out all these places, all these fire departments and so forth are willing to take part and provide this training venue for everybody. So
good to see it going full bore back again here in April.
Oh, yeah.
We were here in August, as you know, not too long ago. Post COVID. So this year, I think it was a pretty resounding success. We had full buses. We've got full classrooms, full displays out there. Didn't Bobby say this was probably record setting attendance?
Yeah. Overall.
Clearly FDIC is back on its feet and running just as good or better than it ever has. Yeah. But you mentioned how long ago people were flowing water in the streets of Cincinnati as doing demonstrations. Yeah. And here we are, 2022, flowing tens of thousands of gallons of water in our class, trying to get through that mystery of, hey, you're a firefighter, so you just know how to flow water. But the reality is there's techniques to go with those tools. And if it's never been passed to you, then you need to get yourself into one of these classes. And
you don't know what you don't know.
Perfect. Yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
In regards to our group of instructors, and by the way, this isn't everybody. So for you folks, you know, watching this, we're missing a couple of our people right now. You know, they're integral parts of this strategic fire training team. But Jerry Knapp, one of our guys, he's doing a class right now. And by the way, he's doing his class on gas emergencies and so forth. But, you know, he's just super member of the team. Tim Pillsworth also, he's another one. When you take a look at our members, we have people from big cities, small cities, career operations, volunteer operations, East Coast to West Coast. That's what makes up our team, and that's what's unique. So when somebody comes to our class, and I got this compliment last year from one person, he says, you know what? You guys all say the same thing. And that's what I think any student who comes here is looking for. Not a whole bunch of crap to scramble up your brain. the same message from each instructor. So if a student asks you, you, or you something, they're looking for the same consistency, I think. And I think that's what we bring to the table right there.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is we all take care of each other. You know, maybe not by saying things or whatever, but like you've heard me tell the story last year. We were watching an older gentleman wrestling with a 2.5. Micah, you were there with him. Martin was another one who was close by. And I think you were there behind him also. And all I had to do was stand back and let you guys handle it. And that's what, you know, I think any student deserves. And I know that's what we provide is that, you know, everybody's there to help back up and get the students, you know, on the right road when they run into problems.
Yeah. It's nice to pull that student off to the side and help them, give them one-on-one instructions while we kept the class flowing and moving. Yeah. So,
you know, I can remember when we first start being scared to death to take these classes because it's so intimidating. I mean, some people here are pretty intimidating. And it's easy to be.
It's not true.
But the comfort you get from that one-on-one time as a student, when I was new, learning how to do this, you know, hey, you're going to be able to do this. And the progress they make from the morning where they can't hold a hose till the afternoon, they look like a, you know, they're starting to look like a hose ninja. And they, you can see the confidence that they get throughout the day.
And the testimony of our classes is exactly what you said about the diversity of our group from all over the country, from South America, Central America, Middle East, and the far West. And what I want to highlight is we had another compliment yesterday from a student about our class because we cover every discipline of the engine company operations, from hose on the ground to movement to hose over ladder, rope drops, the deck gun, stretching dry. We cover the whole basis. So
Standpipes.
Yeah. And the compliment we got yesterday from the student was, you guys aren't just teaching big city tactics. You guys are teaching street base experience firefighting from the 3-man volunteer company all the way up to the big city companies. It all comes together because that's what we teach is engine company operations. So that was a big compliment to our class yesterday.
From one of the things that we do, and by the way, we also are taking really at least a 1 week presentation and condensing it down to 8 hours. And in that 8 hours, you know, we can have them going one thing to another, to another, to another. There's only so much you can do. But that's the thing we try to do is tailor it to the 3-member company, because that's what we realize most of the American Fire Service is dealing with. And in some cases, less than that. So the whole thing about what we have them work with, like the 1¾-inch, the 2-inch, and some people have never even heard of 2-inch from where they're from, let alone work with one before. And here they are, they have one in their hands. Then they go to the 2.5. Then we go with the master stream appliances. But they get to do, like in Jerry and Tim's area, they get to do residential fire attack simulations. They go up with Jeff and they got the standpipe, because we got the building that allows us to do that standpipe maze. And that's pretty cool, I got to say. That standpipe maze with the smoke and the flame simulator, that works really good.
Yeah, it's a great prop.
And then these guys are taking care of heavy stream attack for commercial structures, warehousing, and places like that, wide open floor areas where they go with a ram appliance and a 2.5. Go after it, go big. And see, that's one of the things I like about our guys. We're all on the same page. You're going to go after a fire, you go after it with overwhelming force. Yeah. Don't cut back on your water.
And you mentioned putting confidence into people. So by the end of the class, they're much different than when they started.
Oh, yeah.
It was you three yesterday were really working with a couple of people that were having a hard time because they quite honestly not even weren't told how to do things in a certain way to help, but they may have even been told they'll never be able to do it.
Yeah.
So for them to have, I guess, the continued confidence, like, I'm just going to go sign up for a class and see if I really can or can't do this. And luckily enough, they came to our class.
Yeah. We have one student who said he's never even had an academy. So realistically, what we're teaching him is the first time he's ever been taught anything, how to hold hose, anything. I know when I went through my academy, it was, here, kid, put the fire out. They didn't tell me how to hold it. They didn't tell me anything I should do. Just
just put the fire out. So you talk about impacts we're making on these kids or whatever, you know, he at least has a foundation to build off of now. Yeah. Whether he's got 2 months or 5 years or.
And that's how it was for my academy. You know, here, you know, we did the parking lot, hold the hose. Yeah, yeah, we're all standing up. Here, go into the fire, put out this building. That's where hope comes in. You know, God, I hope this goes well. Hope is not a good plan. Hope never works.
And what do we hear quite often? That every time we go across the country teaching is, I wish I had this.
Yeah.
And I started.
We heard that the other day. I wish I had this 25 years ago.
Unbelievable. So, but thanks for this venue to get this opportunity. So,
nice. Yeah, I guess one of the big differences I noticed this year, when we do go out and we go to a fire district or a fire department and we're training with them for a couple of days, we tend to have, we can see their general approach and we can zero in on, okay, this is how they may or may not have been shown how to do this. And we give them our techniques for them to consider. But when we come to FDIC, we see people doing it different way. Like we had 28 students. There's probably 15 different ways of the way they're trying to do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so as an instructor, it's a bit of a challenge because each person, you have to figure out, okay, this is where they're coming from. You know, they may have seen a video on doing it this way, or they may have been not told how to do any of it. Or maybe they've been trying to do it our way, but they didn't have anybody there to actually show them, drop that elbow in, bring that foot back. It's, you know, get that body position perfect so that the technique will work.
Yeah.
Regardless of your body size.
And that's that's an amazing thing when you see them at 8 o'clock in the morning and they can't hold the hose. And then by lunch, they're not even thinking about what they're
doing. By the end of the day, they're handling that, you know, 2-inch line flowing better than 240 gallons a minute.
Yeah.
And they're working as a team. They just met this morning and they're killing it.
That's gotta be the hardest thing though. They've never met each other.
Right.
For the most part. Most of them have never met each other.
We had a couple from Manhattan, Kansas Fire Department. They split up. They each went through a separate line. And when dealing with some of these students, and especially when we start doing the movement, the hose movement, moving, advancing the hose, you're working with people that have never worked together. And the first time they're doing it, there's some struggles because one's taking off and one's, you know, lagging behind. But by the middle of the morning, and they're doing it a few times, all of a sudden they're all getting pretty even movement, and they're communicating. I think it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And for me, as coming up as a fireman a good 10, 12 years ago, when I took an Aaron Fields class, and he said, I think it was in one of the conference rooms here, and he's like, our language as the fire service is terrible. Mm-hmm. Because it's different, not only regionally, but even locally. And if we can't decide on a language of how do you ask for more hose? Or how do you ask somebody to move to where I am to help me get something done? It just made total sense. And
come here.
Yeah. So, and then how do you make those communications through a face piece where you can barely see? So I think, you know, we've integrated a lot of those life lessons, and that one's included. Definitely. We need to get people talking to each other the same way.
You know, that brings up a great point about the communication. I honestly believe, again, I'm the old guy here, you know.
Really?
In case you didn't figure out. So when I went on the job in the 70s, and this is before me, you know, my fire department used to have terms that you were given as a young fireman, you know, and you were supposed to know those terms. It had apparatus terms. And you had fire ground terms pertaining to an engine. They used to have a handout where they had pictures of people, like, you know, giving the hand signals on how to tell them the turntable operator to raise a stick, put it over this way to extend it and so forth. I don't remember them. And I never worked on a truck, as kind of obvious, you know, so forth. Squad, yes. But anyways, we used to have that vocabulary. It's been lost over time. Relate that to what we did out there the other day when we had the 15-inch circle. What is the definition of 15-inch circle, which used to be in your training book, especially the essentials book, because I remember reading it there, and that's gone.
The how do you gauge?
So how do you, reach how do you gauge? And when you ask people, how do you define a good fire street? They look at you, you know, with that 1,000-yard stare. They have no idea what you're talking about. So there's a communication issue right there. a language barrier within the fire service. So, yeah, interesting stuff. It might have been there at one time. Might be gone.
And then in addition to the verbal communication, you have to be able to use nonverbal communication. Right. Because I don't know about John, my ears are kind of still ringing from being in a closed up room with a ram all day.
Right. Well, we know it was loud when you guys could hear us five floors up. So.
Yeah, you hear the thunder up there. And, you know, five floors up at Washington Township is actually 10 floors up. I don't know if you guys noticed.
Yeah.
That's a tall building.
It is a tall building.
But you, one more thing on communication is hand signals. We use them as a group, as a matter of fact, because we're used to not having radios and we need to like send water. Right. It's interesting, like how a lot of people don't really consider that on the fire ground. Yeah. But maybe they should.
Yeah.
How much more efficient is it if you have a line of sight with somebody and they can just move their hand some way that is a universal understood motion?
Opening a hydrant, expecting, ready for the water, opening the hydrant, charging a line.
Pack up, go home.
Yeah.
Down get air.
All right. Best of all the first.
But you know what's really neat is, and you brought up Aaron Fields, his influence that you had on Aaron back in the day, and think about all the generations, that information that you guys are passing on.
No, it's here, correct?
The what was taught to you?
No, it was West. Well, FDIC West. Right? Yeah, it was FDIC about 2002 or
yeah, but you ran into him,
right?
Affected him.
But what's so neat is that he gives a credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
He credits the FDIC experience, the opportunity that he got to meet with you. You pulled him off to the side. And look how many years of fire service influence and impact. Yeah. Plus, he gives a credit, just like we give the credit to the people who taught you before our time. And it's been tested, proven, working today. Yeah. So it's a big compliment.
Yeah.
And other stuff is a mystery. If we don't allow it to become a mystery, you know, if we just will take the time to pass it down, and I think it's getting easier to pass it down with the technology that's available, the good and the bad of social media. I mean, bad ideas go around just as fast or faster than good ideas. But it's easier now to pass on your legacy and the fire service legacy because we have this to work with. We just have to be careful with it because need to guard the information and make sure, like you said, give credit where credit's due. There really is not a whole lot that's new out there, right? And I think any instructor out there that's worth their salt will say so.
Yeah,
you know, like this was given to me. I have it for a moment. I'm giving it to you, and it's going to be your turn before you know it.
It wasn't that long ago. I was a student. In your guys' class.
Well, you're still on probation. So.
Oh, that's right. We're still on probation.
Same,
careful.
Same thing with Martin. I think it was what? How many years ago that you and I met? That was at Eddie Frederick's.
2014. 2014.
And then we met in Denison, Iowa. And that went on for 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is it's really cool. The chemistry that some people develop. You know, you go out, you meet somebody and so forth, met you, had you as a student. This guy came about by accident, really.
Thank you, Doc.
He dropped out on a day. This guy was a student also. Next thing you know, I got a phone call from this guy from, you know, way up there where they have green stores and stuff like that. I mean, what the heck is this? You know, next thing you know, here he is with us for firefighting. No, but that's so cool, you know. And again, look at Jerry and I have been together way back, you know.
He has the old Andy days, right?
Yeah. Wow.
The Andy days.
Well, yeah, they were from Rocket County.
Right, they're all together.
So forth.
You do have a couple of pictures from the Andy days. I know you don't have a whole bunch of pictures, but I remember seeing that picture of that group of you guys, and you're like, see, look, this group. This is what we're modeling. All these guys are from different parts of the country.
You are exactly right.
What were some of the names of the guys that you were?
Jerry Tracy, because he was Andy's captain at Squad 18. Mark Wesseldine. And one of the things that I was going to do, I'm going to Andy Frederick's training days in September. I still got Andy's business card. And it was the day like this, back in 2001, I think it was. It's hands-on instructors were downstairs in the deli. Sitting around a table, and guys are saying, hey, you get your card? Did you get your
Business guys?
Business, you know, yeah, so forth. And Mark Westeldine sitting next to me, you know, he says, yeah, me and Andy. That's all. You know, I thought that is so classy, so cool. Matty Rush, Austin, Texas, you know. Obviously, Dave McGrail. John Cirillo was another guy I worked with Andy at Squad 18. But he, I think John, I don't know where he's captain. He's captain one of the rescues.
He was lieutenant when I first met him.
Okay, he's captain now. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of guys there. A whole bunch. You know. Everybody had the same message, too.
Yeah, and
oh, Ted Corporandi, Tom Murray. Yeah, can't leave out Tom Murray. Tom was, yeah, you know, like my big brother all those years. I go to him, man. Oh, no, Jeff, you shouldn't think about that.
Right. So I think that, that brings me all the way around to when we started earlier talking about having young people, the middle children of the fire service, and older people in our classes. And they have a first-person relationship with, I guess, people that have shaped the modern fire service and training by training with you and us and other instructors here at FDIC. Is the information that's coming down is better than 150 years old. You know?
Isn't that interesting? Because we have so much influence from YouTube, Facebook, all the things, and you don't know if that stuff is credible or not. Whereas the stuff that's been around and worked, those principles and practices, they do work. And that's what I'll put in my presentation. That's what we will all teach here for strategic fire training, is that that's all about the principles and the practices. If you stick with those, you're going to be successful in probably most of your cases, right? So I think we all realize that. But when somebody wants to say, oh, no, firefighting is no longer about experience. Man, when I heard that, and that was about, four, 5 or 6 years ago, when somebody was out there trying to change the way we think and say, no, your experience doesn't matter. Those old guys, no, they're dinosaurs and things like that. Firefighting is now about science, and that's a bunch of baloney, okay?
It's a support leg of the fire service, but it's not the fire
there
service.
You go. That's a great way of saying it. It's a supporting mechanism for us. If you want to develop turnout gear that has greater flame resistance and things like that, that's where science comes in with the testing you use for that. You want to develop some kind of tool or equipment, that's where science comes in, along with technology. But when it comes to employing it on a fire ground, if somebody sitting in some little rural county USA says, oh, I think all fires should be hit from the outside, or somebody from out west where, you know, they don't even have grass and so forth because everything's brown, they say, we don't put anybody on roofs, so nobody should put anybody on roofs. That's a bunch of blue gas too, okay? Firefighting is different. Firefighting is circumstantial. Firefighting is geographical and it's local. Don't try to make a blanket statement how we all should operate. Good aggressive firefighting is what saves lives and properties, and that's what we're all about, and that's what the fire service should be about. So just a very simple statement right there.
Yeah, and that is the hallmark, and that is the focus of our training.
Yeah,
is to give you the confidence to
be aggressive.
To be aggressive, that as long as you're getting cold and wet as a nozzle man, you're not going to burn.
For sure.
And you're going to be able to get that water where it has to go.
You know, right before every FDIC, and then Bobby gave us a great promo, that little promo tape saw.
Yeah.
You know, they're like getting me to Colin Powell because of what we have developed here. Jesus, you know, and that is, you go into a fire with overwhelming force. That's proven. You don't need science to tell you that. You go in with overwhelming force, you kill the fire. And that's, again, one of those things that we do for our students. And like you were saying, you know, at the end of the day, man, they got a whole different look on their face. They're feeling more confident. It's something that they're learning and that they can apply it. It's just simple stuff like that. And it's all about the principles and the practices.
Because the fire will do what? It'll be complex enough. Keep it simple.
Very good.
What we're teaching them, I mean, they may have never thought about taking a 2.5 or a RAM or doing any of these things. I won't say we're opening up their mind. We have guys with 2 months. We have captains and chiefs to go to our program. So it really can make a difference on departments.
You know, I think it's important. We do teach aggressive firefighting, but I don't even think you need to put aggressive in there. If you are a firefighter, you should be aggressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I played football in high school. Was I an aggressive football player? No. How do you determine that? You want to be careful and not say, I think some people think aggressive is reckless. We need to be smart firefighters. Know your principles, know your basics, because everything is all about basics.
What was the title of our program? We didn't have the word aggressive in there.
No, we were effective
engine company operations.
Effective.
No spelling quiz to get into FDIC.
That is for sure. Well, and not to make a full circle everything, and we mentioned this on this podcast already, from small fire departments like Manhattan Firehead to large fire departments like Cleveland, and it all ties together. So when we had students in our class who would take this information home and say, these guys, this is what I learned, this is what I was shown, and I think this philosophy matches, they're going to meet a wall of resistance because it's new to some outsiders or a threat to some people. But it's not big city experiences. It's street firefighting. And that's where I like to see those, that diversity, and then our group's diversity. And it all comes together. So we're teaching people from Cleveland to KCK to Addison. And it just is so, it's not advanced. It's not aggressiveness. It's not reckless. It's street experience.
So part of our group, you're, Blake, you're an administrator with a fire training system up in Wisconsin.
Yep.
And you're covering dozens of fire departments, correct?
Yeah, I cover 58 fire departments.
Wow. So you get to see how the textbooks come into the fire academy and how you have to try to blend in street smarts into that scholastic environment. What's probably the biggest challenge right now with engine company operations when it comes to the text versus the streets in your view?
I guess in my view, the textbooks were lacking some areas in terms of just that street smart being brought into it and written into it. I mean, you may get a chapter on nozzles, you may get a half a chapter on hose, and it's an instructor's job to bring that, tie it all together out on the training ground. And here again, we're relying on how was that instructor trained? You guys have been up to Western, did a couple classes up there. I've got two of my instructors, my main instructors, took your class, and I'm seeing in their hands-on portion of the course, your nozzle mechanics and hose movement and all that is being integrated into there, overpowering that fire. But, you know, it's back to the textbook. Some of the problem is, you know, we're writing by committee. And it's who's on that committee affects a lot of it. And so, you know, I'm fortunate that I have an avenue to put some input into that. Being, you know, if I'm reviewing a book or whatever. But still, it's a committee atmosphere, and we get a little carried away sometimes in too much safety talk and not explaining why we do what we do, how to do it safe and yet be aggressive.
I guess don't fear. Comes from that, the opinion of what's safe, what is risk. We look at our jobs, it's like, well, we mitigate the risk by being highly trained and understanding our first due, understanding our equipment, understanding our personnel.
Yep.
And how to apply those things to the problem. Whereas I think committees look at safety as something different. They look at it as more of a an equipment-based mantra or even a default procedure that takes so many steps to actually solving the problem versus saying if we just solve the problem, then none of this other stuff becomes a safety issue.
Yep.
So I think that's where we lose some of the eggheads in the world, where they're thinking that firefighters are just cowboys and they're out there to do stuff that's dangerous because it's fun.
Yeah. And you know, I agree with you a lot on that. You also have people have agendas that get on committees to advance a certain thing.
Good point.
And whether it's an equipment that they want to sell.
It may be an equipment. It may be
push a school.
It may be an equipment. They may be pushing that, in their opinion, something is too dangerous to do, that we need to do something else first.
Such as going on roofs, maybe?
Going on roofs. You know, going on roofs can be dangerous.
Other sayings. They won't put their special saying in there.
You know, it happens. You know, and we can't, well, a lot of times it's caught and it's kept out of there, but there's some that slide through. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be careful with it.
I'd like to bring something up here. You guys got a great thing going here with this and training. So some time back, I was talking with someone who says, you realize the training books today are about 1,500 to 1,700 pages long. The training weeks, even Cleveland back home, how many weeks?
22 weeks.
22 weeks. So many fire departments are training these people over 16 to 22-week period. So as I talked to some people, they said, and talking to students also, in that time, how much time out of the 22 weeks did you spend on actual fire attack? Well, we spent 3 days. We're on the wrong page. Now go to those guys that you just mentioned. They all want to have their thumbprint in that book about safety, safety, safety. Number one, let's go to their backgrounds and see what gives them that authority or that mindset where they're going to say, oh, no, that's unsafe. We don't go to roofs. Well, maybe your department doesn't because they don't have any fire duty experience that they have to fall back on. Don't make that blanket statement once again. But do you think that maybe we have too many of these safety guys out there who are looking at those books and say, oh, yeah, that's dangerous, so let's put this paragraph in there about this and this and that, to make up for the lack of training these kids should be getting in the academy for firefighting?
Well, we've had this discussion where, you know, if we train them to be good firefighters and we train them on the fire ground to be able to identify things and understand what they're doing, we're eliminating that risk or that safety issue to start with. And, you know, we're fortunate where I'm at now that, you know, we don't have a lot of time for a certification course, but at least we're supposed to be doing the majority of the time we do have on the fire ground, on the training ground, in the burn buildings, throwing ladders, getting up on roof. And so we're fortunate there. There's a lot of college or a lot of state requirements or states out there that you may have the majority of its book work to pass the written test. Yes. And only a minimal hours out on the training ground. And I think we're in that type of system. There's a huge disservice to the students, right, a huge disservice to the fire department, and to the, just the our side of the house. It just, we're lacking that connect.
The problem probably looks a little different from region to region around the country.
It does.
I mean, there may be some areas of the country that, yeah, we do the book work and then we go banging out on the training ground for a couple months.
Yep.
I don't know. There's individual fire departments still doing their own, you know, job proficiency requirements. Many decades ago, talking about having an actual apprenticeship program.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That was in the late 70s.
Yeah. And so it can change depending on where you're at. Like,
oh yeah,
people may be listening to this thing, we really don't have this problem. And then there's other areas that are going to resonate and say, yeah, we get our young people into the job and they honestly have no time, real time, trying to do things in a controlled setting before they're asked to do it out on the fire ground.
You get the test before you get the class.
And that's the terrible thing about some experiences, right? You get the result, you know, before you've actually had the lessons.
Yeah, yeah, you get you have to take the test before you ever had the class to learn how to do it.
Yeah. Is that what you're seeing up in the Northwest? Is this like part of the issue over there?
Quite a bit. It's like you said, it's local, and even in our county, departments do things differently. So some departments pencil, you know, some departments are aggressive with their nozzle work. So it just depends. But yeah, definitely with the state academies and things like that, they differ from academy to academy.
That's just incredible to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is pretty neat because when I was in, again, academy last year,
academy number two,
when I moved, for people that don't know, I went from Manhattan Fire to Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department, and my classmates all looked at me like, holy shit,
look at this old guy.
He's going to be number one in this class. 15 years experience. And I told him, I said, guys, don't be fooled. This red book is not going to get me to be number one in our class, because a lot of it is written from people who shouldn't be writing. The hands-on portions, we'll go through that. We'll go through that in academy. But don't think just because you have 15 years of experience that this red book is a be-all,
is a slam dunk.
Because there's a lot of stupid stuff in there that is not making any sense. And
especially if somebody has 15 years of experience.
Yeah, 15 like, years on the job.
You've already been filtering out the fluff and just getting down to the brass tacks. And you're just like, okay, now I have to re-remember.
Captain to back in again. And my classmates were like, this guy's going to just knock out all these quizzes and tests. And that's not the case, guys. This is not street experience in this red book. So
you're smarter than that, Micah.
I'm a college.
Yeah, we kept saying you were smart.
I went to these colleges before. But that just, it's a testimony that people who just read the material and not actually put hands-on experience or go down the avenue of thinking literature is going to put out fires, they're highly mistaken.
I mean, the physical training part of our job is so damn important, and it just kind of gets blown off and it's not funded.
Right.
I mean,
it's your foundation.
It really is. And in any other type of service, whether it's police or military, I think the public probably has a different perception of these services. They probably assume that we're physically training regularly and that we're all up to speed and that there's minimum standards that are probably not easy. It boggles me sometimes when we run into folks that, and they tell you straight out, I haven't really taken a physical hands-on training class since the fire academy 5-10 years ago.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, we really are at square one here.
But we have people out there teaching nationally who have never done it.
And that's the thing. We're an open book, right? Come get it. Come show us what you got. And if it's worth it, if it makes sense, it'll last.
Who remembers that quote that Commissioner Ebersol of Chicago put out a few years ago? What do people expect when they have an emergency? They expect 5 people to arrive on an engine, not 2 people on a pickup truck. They want decathlon champions. They want people with medical degrees. They want people with physical attributes to put their fire out and make their life better. It was something like that. It was pretty cool, you know, and to the point, you know, and that goes back to that perception that people have about the firefighter when they come to their problem. So,
yeah. Well, we're doing our
part. Anyway, that's right. Yeah. We did a great job. Yeah, we really did. Like, and you know, that's not bragging. We do a great job with the people, and it's fun to see the people. Like we said, sometimes you get people from across the globe coming to your class, and we bring them all together. So,
Japan and Canada this year. So.
Italy,
Canada,
Italy.
That's right.
Alaska.
I mean, I know Alaska. That's
a foreign country.
Alaska's further than the people came from Canada. Yeah, you can almost see Russia.
You can almost see Russia.
We've had Dubai, we've had Hawaii, we've had
Mexico.
Yep.
And we can now relabel the inch and 16th tip the 27 millimeter tip. So I appreciate the Canadian guys helping us out with that.
No, let's convert that.
No, I can't learn millimeter stuff.
Too much for you,
Chance. He told you?
Unless it's 9.
It's great. That's great.
Well, let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for tuning in. Please stick with FDIC through this week here, and hopefully we'll see you back here in 2023.
In closing, let's let them know that we have our Firefighter Fridays once a month.
That's right.
We
do a Zoom call where we're together and we talk about things that we want to talk about.
Or things they want to talk about that they email us.
That's right. You can just get to us through our website.
That's second Friday of every month.
Yeah, feel free to get in touch with us, strategicfire.com.
And we're not that intimidated.
Strategic Fire Training.
Training.com.
Strategicfiretraining.com.
Okay.
You guys were talking about, you know, all over the world people. So we've got a comment from a guy from the UK. We're Wales, UK. Just saw him say, I love watching you firefighter EMTs in action on YouTube. Greetings.
Well, hello. Hello.
Another one, Tom, says, great information. This type of get-together is the backbone of the instructor business.
Amen.
And Mark says, lifelong learner, size up is never over.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. Thank you.
To you, Ken, someday.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, yeah, and then the other ones that you're not reading to us say, what a bunch of dumb assholes. Or something like
that. PG, she said, he did it. He did it. We made it.
Were we on air?
Hour. All the way to the last sentence.
We made it all the way through without one of those.
Yeah, we're still on the air.
Sign us off now.
Oh my God. Sorry.
See, it wasn't me. Oh, no! It wasn't me. This time.
I thought when you.
Fun? This is part of it.
Oh, no kidding.
It was
oh, that's great.
Say hi to everyone.
Goodbye,
Jim. All right, bye. Y'all have fun at FDIC, guys.
That's fireman humor.